It's going to be a big weekend in Wisconsin because that's the only state holding a presidential primary on Tuesday.
And the candidates have been flooding that state. Just today, Bernie Sanders had a rally in Sheboygan, has a rally in Sheboygan. Ted Cruz and John Kasich are in Milwaukee. And Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton will visit Wisconsin tomorrow. So let's get to the thing that we haven't heard in a while.
Here and now, 2016.
Gonna miss it when it's not 2016.
They've still
anymore.
Got it. You know, we don't play it every week anymore, but there it is. Well, joining us for today's roundtable is Juana Summers, politics editor for Mashable. Juana, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Rebecca Sinderbrand is also with us, politics news editor for The Washington Post. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi there.
And I want to start with the piece of tape that everyone has heard a million times this week, which was Donald Trump, who said that if abortion is banned in the United States, women who get abortions should be punished. Here it is.
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Now, he walked that back. We've gotten into this debate. But what I want to ask you is people are now talking about him and looking at this as kind of a game changer, although we've heard that before. But people are now talking about him as a zombie candidate. Juana, what does that mean? And is he one?
A zombie candidate. Now, you know, actually, that's a new one for me. But what I can tell you is this, Jeremy. I think it'll be really fascinating to see what this does to Donald Trump in the primary as well as in the general election. Look, his favorability numbers are just abysmal with women, anywhere from 67% to 74% of women, depending on what poll you look at, say they have an unfavorable or negative opinion of Trump. Women, of course, being a majority of the electorate, this is really crushing for him. And it raises questions, to me at least, about whether if he's at the top of the Republican ticket, that'll just be a blowout defeat for him in the general.
Rebecca, zombie candidate?
I'm not sure yet. Count him out. I think that the interesting thing about this incident in particular is it highlighted the fact that, you know, you live by the outsider status, you die by the outsider status. He's risen to the top in large part because he's someone who's unfiltered. He says what he thinks. He's not a practiced politician. He doesn't parse his words. And this is a reminder that there's a reason politicians parse their words. And so, you know, as the weeks go on, as the campaign goes on, you see more and more of these incidents of he's not even necessarily saying what he thinks he wants to say. He may not have given it much thought before at all. But that's the other side of it, in addition to the rising negatives.
So what does that mean for the race as it morphs and as it moves into Wisconsin? Put this in kind of context for us in terms of who has the most to win or lose in this vote. And also, what are the issues that mean the most to voters in Wisconsin?
We're seeing the dynamic shift. And in Wisconsin, there's the potential for there to be a real signal in the race that, yes, this absolutely is anyone's game, in the sense of, you know, right now, Donald Trump is in a position where he has to win around roughly 54-55% of the delegates in order to claim a majority ahead of the convention. If the polls in Wisconsin follow are essentially an indicator of what we're going to see in terms of the actual results, his road gets even tougher. It goes up to 60% or so. And, you know, that's not impossible, but it certainly makes it a little bit further out of reach. And it signals that Ted Cruz and the people who are Trump opponents who've been pouring millions of dollars into fighting him may have figured out a way to undermine him on the ground.
Juana, what do you think?
I think it's also a cultural issue, too, right? If you look at a state like Wisconsin, known for, you could say, a more civil brand of politics, the phrase Wisconsin nice comes to mind. It's the place that's home to Ryan Priebus, the RNC chairman, House Speaker Paul Ryan, more moderate brand of politics. Donald Trump isn't exactly a cultural fit there. So as I'm talking to these so-called anti-Trump forces that Rebecca noted, they see Wisconsin as their best chance to kind of set the race in a new direction. They don't believe that his brash brand of politics that involves attacking another candidate's wife, that involves talking about punishing women who have abortions, they don't think he's a good fit there, and they think that they really have an opportunity to change the tenor of this race and the pace that we've seen so far.
You know, this is a Midwestern state. It's the kind of state you would think that John Kasich would do very well in. Let's listen to him, because he has now, this is courtesy of CNN, but he was, as the other candidates were, a little more hesitant about saying that they would support whoever the eventual nominee is. This is from Wednesday night's town hall.
I've been disturbed by some of the things that I've seen, and I have to think about what my word and endorsement would mean in a, you know, presidential campaign.
Juana, what do you think about what's happening to the party? And are we going to see some kind of breakup of the party, a third party come about, depending on what happens, especially if Donald Trump gets the nomination? But even if he doesn't, does the party stay together?
That's a really great question. You saw Donald Trump come here to Washington, D.C., met with Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman. I think that many conservatives are quite concerned that this could be a breakup of the party, that we could be seeing a new chapter, a different Republican Party than we've seen before. The question is, I think if you're a Republican establishment person, you're in a difficult place right now, right? You don't want to be seen as the party elite taking away the nomination from a person who has won the majority of the contest if Donald Trump does, in fact, you know, go on and continue to win contests as he has in the past. So it's a really difficult needle to thread. I've spoken to a number of Republicans who say that, in fact, they dislike Donald Trump so much, they'd rather vote for literally anybody else or just stay home on election day in the general if he is, in fact, the party's nominee.
Well, it's a good time then to turn to the Democrats. let's listen now to some audio that was recorded by Greenpeace. This is yesterday in New York. Hillary Clinton was confronted by a climate activist who asked her whether she would reject campaign donations from the fossil fuel industry.
I do not have money.
So Hillary is saying that Hillary Clinton saying there that she's sick of the Bernie Sanders campaign lying about this. Little hard to hear over the music. She's clearly angry, though, and you can see her in the video jabbing her finger at the woman saying that she doesn't take money from the industry and calling Bernie Sanders a liar. What does that tell you about the state of the Democratic race right now?
Rebecca.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is the moment at which we thought that Hillary Clinton would be turning her attention to the general, and she thought she'd be turning her attention to the general. And yet she is still locked into this primary season battle. And, you know, from the looks of it, it's certainly looking at last month's fundraising numbers, it's something that may be with her for some time to come. And she can't afford to look past it, even though the math is on her side in terms of the delegates. Overlooking it and looking past it might rub a lot of Sanders supporters the wrong way. You know, primary season wounds have a tendency to heal, but you have to tread carefully.
Well, let's listen to Bernie Sanders here. And this is him speaking to a crowd in the Bronx last night. And once again, saying his campaign is all about creating a political revolution.
And the 15,000 people who are here this evening, you are the heart and soul of this revolution.
Now, it seems that if Bernie Sanders pulls off a win in Wisconsin, some people may be a little bit surprised, but it won't be as much of a game changer as it might be if he wins in New York, which is, of course, it's his home state. It's where he was born, but it's also the state that Hillary Clinton represented in the Senate. Juana.
Absolutely. I think New York is going to be a fascinating battleground on both sides of the aisle. There's a lot of people who can claim New York as their so-called home state. And you've seen that already with Hillary Clinton campaigning in Harlem at the iconic Apollo Theater. Bernie Sanders, as we speak, actually his campaign has some surrogates out holding a women's roundtable in Harlem. It's a very diverse state. It's a state that many of the candidates have, you know, flags on the ground. And I think that if Bernie Sanders can, in fact, wrest New York from Hillary Clinton, then we'll be talking about more of a game changer. Wisconsin, due to the dynamics of the Democratic electorate, they're the brand of politics that you see. That wouldn't surprise me so much. New York, though, I think will be a big deal, and you'll see some Clinton backers a little bit concerned that the tide may not be going their way, despite the fact that we must note that she does, in fact, have a massive lead when it comes to both pledged delegates and superdelegates.
How about in terms of money? Maybe, Rebecca, you can take this one. Bernie Sanders broke his own record for fundraising. He brought in $44 million in the month of March. How big a role is money playing in the campaigns? It always does, but especially right now.
Oh, absolutely. This is a huge role. I mean, you know, look, generally at this point in the race, when you have someone who's a challenger who is far from the nomination, not going to win the nomination, the money starts drying up, and that's what ends their run. That's not happening for him. He can afford to stay in the race. He can afford to fight. Certainly, it gives him an appearance of momentum that Hillary Clinton can't claim at this moment on that side. The interesting thing is, of course, when you talk to Sanders' advisors and ask them about the specific road ahead, it's very hard to get from them exactly how they would get to a majority, short of talking over superdelegates to going with a candidate who doesn't have a majority of pledged delegates. Look, he'd have to win landslides in every state and win New Jersey and Pennsylvania and California by significant margins, all states where Hillary Clinton currently holds a somewhat significant lead. So we'll see exactly how that shakes out. But the math hasn't changed, regardless of the money.
But Juana, and we just have a few seconds here, do you think we're going to be covering both sides of this race all the way up to what, June 7th is California and a number of other states, and then the Democrats will vote in D.C. on June 14th?
I think that's very likely, given the amount of money in the race. If I'm a Bernie Sanders, as Rebecca noted, I don't see a good argument for getting out of this race if you have a base of supporters that's willing to go with you all the way.
Yeah.
What reason is there to get out? I think it's going to be a very fascinating race for the next couple weeks and months ahead.
Juana Summers, politics editor for Mashable, and Rebecca Cinderbrand, politics news editor for The Washington Post. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much.